Let's go to the Lord in prayer. God, our Father in heaven, thank you for this evening and this opportunity. Thank you for the Bible. Thank you for an opportunity to consider it. Protect us from taking that for granted. Pray that in the time we spend together tonight, we'll understand the Bible a little bit better, understand you better, and as a result of understanding you and our Savior better, we will be more obedient, have greater joy and confidence, a better understanding of how we can express that and how we can serve you. Thank you for that opportunity. Thank you because it comes all from your grace through your Son, Jesus Christ. And we thank you and praise you and praise him and pray that he comes soon. Amen. So we're going to take a look at Jerusalem so that I don't forget. This is 6 weeks, but we're going to go 2 weeks. And then I'm going to be away for 2 weeks. And then in July, we'll do 4 more weeks. So just so you're praised on that. What's that? Did I say July? I meant November. So like they don't start with the same letter. They don't have the same number of letters. I don't know why I said July.
July is Aramaic for November.
That might be it. So November. So I'm going to do these 2 weeks, take 2 weeks off, and Chris is going to have a class. I'm not sure what he's doing. But then I'm going to do the last 4 weeks there. I'm still kind of, I'm like through about the first three, and so hopefully I'll have a better outline. The general outline, I hope, is tonight we're going to do just the basic shape of the land, where is Jerusalem, and then we're going to try to do an historic, basically do it kind of historically, Old Testament, Jesus life, then maybe a little bit on Jerusalem today, and then go on to Jerusalem in the future. And if we have time, there's a couple very narrow kind of specific things I want to look at that I think are interesting. But tonight the objective is just so you have a basic idea of the map of Jerusalem in your head, and we'll start into the Old Testament. The materials for the class, that's the first thing we're going to cover. What is the number one material for the class? There you go. And I like to do this at the beginning of my classes because it's important to remember that we're not studying geography. Well, we are, but what we're studying is the Bible. Bible study always comes down to vocabulary and grammar. You're reading words. And a big part of the vocabulary of the Bible are place names. And if you don't know what those place names mean, then you're not going to understand those passages. Maybe you remember from the class I did before, a passage in Isaiah that I put up there, and I put in blanks for the place names. You know how we read the Bible? They went from to, and then the people of came, and pretty soon you realize, how do I know what's going on? So we're going to try to fill in those blanks. We do have some other materials. There are handouts. There's three images tonight on two different pages. If you don't have it, maybe somebody could volunteer to come up and hand them around. And there'll be more handouts each time. I would have liked to have had all 6 weeks ready by the time we started, but I haven't quite gotten there. Some other materials sort of for the class. There's these two maps. They're available up here. You can buy them. They're not really essential to this class. I don't make any money on it anyway, but I put them up there because if you have them, bring them, use them. They're also just generally good maps to have. They're the maps that I used in my 10-week class on the topic. So if you're interested, they're up here. I think they're $1.50 each. And then there's a satellite Bible atlas. There's a couple of pages in this on Jerusalem. I'll be using some other maps there. I just have it here because I have them, and if you're interested, take a look at one up here, and if you want one, you can buy it. There's two maps in that atlas that I'll be using a lot. There's map 11-1. Which is Jerusalem in Old Testament times, and then the same map, basically with different drawings, for Jerusalem in Jesus' time, 11-2. So 11-1 and 11-2, if you have that atlas, you might make a note, those two maps will be really helpful in this class to figure out where things are. So those are the materials for the class. I've got this map up here to take a look. I've also got a couple books up here that are kind of interesting. Take a look at them and write down the title. If you want to ask me some questions about them, I can tell you about that too. So, with that, let's kind of dive into our study of Jerusalem. The first question we want to answer is, where is Jerusalem? So let's take a look at where is Jerusalem. It's somewhere on this map, right? You might see, I've got a little red thing there. There's our choices. Here we are in Dallas, which is in North America. Probably I'll remember that from sometime. There's South America. That's everything I'm going to say about North and South America in this class, okay? Because they don't show up in the Bible, at least not much. But There's some other continents that do. Europe shows up in the Bible. Africa shows up in the Bible. And Asia shows up in the Bible. Those are three continents that do. Now, if I take those three circles, and I drew them this way on purpose, but and draw those three circles, I don't know if somebody knows in geometry, what's the name of that little triangular thing when you put three circles together, what's it called? I don't know. But I do know that that's where most of the Bible takes place. And that's not a coincidence, I don't think. The very placement of the land of Israel is at the center of those three continents. So that's roughly where Jerusalem is. Now, this is going to be like the first class in my geography class, compressed to about 5 or 10 minutes. If you had the class, it'll be a good review. And if you haven't, it'll be a good introduction. And it'll also maybe encourage you that if you want to do that class, let me know. I'm always looking for groups. If they want me to do that 10-week geography class, if you know a group that would like to do it, I'm ready to go. If you remember, the land of Israel on the west is the Mediterranean Sea. Kind of to the east and the southeast is the Arabian Desert. And right in between is what I call the land between, because it is between. It's the center of these three continents, and it's wedged right in between the Arabian Desert and the Mediterranean Sea. That's one of the maps I talked about earlier, and that you can see again more clearly, the Mediterranean Sea, the Arabian Desert, and this thin strip of land right in between, the land between, where the land of Israel is. So, you may remember from the class, if you were to have one picture in your mind of the world of the Bible, and I'm going to try to do this, give you this image you can take away with you, it's this. The Mediterranean Sea, the Arabian Desert, and the land between. That, I think, is a pretty graphic image. And believe it or not, that image right there is at the heart of a lot of Bible stories, because the kingdoms that surround them, Egypt, representing kind of Africa to the southwest, and then the northern kingdoms. Does anybody remember my acronym for the northern kingdoms and what they are? Remember, they're very old kingdoms, ancient kingdoms. I'll just pretend that you're shy and don't want to say. Very old kingdoms, AARP, right? Right? Only it's not AARP, it's AABP, but that's the way I always remember them. There is Aram. This is in time and in place, really. Aram, Assyria, Babylon, that's where you have to substitute a B for the R in AARP, and Persia. That's the order they come in time, and that's the order they are in space. The point, though, is that when either the northern kingdoms or Egypt want to expand economically for trade or militarily, the only way they get at the others is through this land between. Remember, we talked about they come right through there. So let's take a look at what that looks like on the map. Here's Egypt again. There's Aram, Assyria, Babylon, and Persia. So you can see geographically, left to right, kind of, that's what they are. And that's also how they appear in the Bible in time. Early in the kingdom, Aram's a problem. After Aram is a problem, then Assyria becomes a problem, because Assyria becomes the dominant nation. Then Babylon takes over Assyria, and Babylon is the main threat. Then Persia takes over Babylon, and Persia conquers and then actually allows the people to come back. When we move to the New Testament, well, between the Testaments, Greece is the main biblical power. And I used to say, well, you know, because we don't really hear about Greece in the Bible because it's between the Testaments, but that's not really true, because Daniel gives us an incredible description of the Greek Empire. He just gave it before it happened. He didn't write it as history. And Rome. So those are the kingdoms of the Bible. Those kingdoms tend to gather around rivers, the Nile River in Egypt, the Tigris and the Euphrates. And I'm going to do a real quick run through here. This is getting to Jerusalem. So if you're Aram and there's Egypt and you want to trade or have communications, you can see how the path between you, the place that matters, the land bridge that's really important, is this little box of land right there. Later on, if you are Assyria, well, if you're coming trying to get to Africa, you can't go in a straight line because you can't cross the Arabian Desert, so you have to come around the Fertile Crescent and come through the same piece of land. Babylon, same issue. You can't cross the desert. You have to pass the Fertile Crescent, that arc, and come through the land between. Persia, Same thing. Get to the New Testament, it's still the same issue, only it's the Mediterranean Sea that's blocking Greece. Moving big armies by sea was not going to happen then, or major trade routes, so you have to come around and go through the land between. Rome, at the time of Jesus, same issue. So you can see that this piece of land right here becomes very, very, very important. That is illustrated, I believe, in Ezekiel 5:5. You might want to write that down. I've got the verse here, though. Thus says the Lord God, this is Jerusalem. I have set her at the center of the nations with countries all around. And then in the next few verses, he keeps saying, with countries all around, in the center of the nations. And the idea is that all of these nations are looking at Israel. Again, not a coincidence. Ezekiel has this theme about how Israel will be showing the nations. And you can see, so that verse right there, I think, can be illustrated graphically. It's sort of at the center of the biblical world. I think something very similar but different happens in the New Testament. In Acts, Jesus is about to ascend, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you. And you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria to the ends of the earth. So, this is what we had in the Old Testament. What we have in the New Testament is something very similar. All those arrows going out from Jerusalem. If you're going to take a nation and put them at a place where you can test them, where they're going to be constantly faced by people who want to take their property, but if you want to bless them, they can enjoy the riches of all the nations, what better place would you put them than in that square? And in the New Testament, if you have the most important, the only message that matters to the world, what place do you want to send that out from? You want to send it out from right there because it goes to all the continents. So here we go. Three pictures that I think are kind of another mental picture of the story of the Bible. Genesis, I'm going to say to John, not to Matthew, I'm going to say John. Israel is to be the center of the world, and the people are to come to Israel. That's the focus. God is located in a special way in his temple in Israel. Then from Acts to Jude, it's the story of that message going from Jerusalem out. And I don't have a lot of time. Well, maybe when we get to the last thing about Jerusalem, we'll get to the next one. But I believe in the book of Revelation, it kind of does this again. Jerusalem becomes again the center when Messiah returns and stands on the Mount of Olives and establishes his kingdom. But in any event, that piece of land becomes very, very important. Okay? So we're honing in on where is Jerusalem. It's obviously in this square. We'll hone in a little bit closer. My guess is no one will do it, but does anybody remember the... Remember when we did the Bible geography class, because I see some similar faces, the steps in drawing the map. Can anybody remember the first five steps? There's a prize for you if you do. I don't know what it is yet, but I'll make one up. Anybody remember what the first step is? Somebody said it. Mediterranean Sea or the Mediterranean coast. Yes, very good. And what comes next? Oh, directly east of that little bump, that peninsula. What's over there? Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee. Number three is the Dead Sea, directly south, about the same width, a little higher. Then comes the Jordan River, connecting the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea. And number five, bonus points if you can remember number five, the Central Mountain Ridge. I don't think there's anything in the Bible that specifically describes the Central Mountain Ridge, but it's there and it comes into play. If we look at a map of Israel, we can see these features. There's the coast, the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, the Jordan River, and the Central Mountain Ridge. This map, the next one, and these ones come from the Satellite Bible Atlas. That's kind of more of a 3D picture, and you can see a little bit better that mountain ridge. So keeping this picture in mind with this mountain ridge, remember this picture. You've got all this traffic from the north and south, commercial trade, armies, everything else. So all this traffic is being funneled into this special land because of the Arabian Desert and the Mediterranean Sea. And when it gets there, this central mountain ridge becomes very, very important because it's an impediment to traffic. So you've got people coming from the north and the south, and wherever they come from, they've got to deal with this mountain ridge. And so ways to get through this mountain ridge can become the very center of, like, the biblical world. Josiah dies at one of those, Megiddo. And even in Revelation, it's the mountain of Megiddo is where armies will gather. So that central mountain ridge becomes very important. And now we're going to get to finally where Jerusalem is then. So here's the world, the Bible world. Here's this special part that's at the center of it. And then we get down to the center of the center. We go to the north part of the Dead Sea, the edge of the Dead Sea, go directly east to the mountain ridge, and there's Jerusalem. So it's at a place where you can cross that mountain ridge. So Jerusalem is very much at the heart of the biblical world, physically, spiritually as well. Show you on this map the coast again. Sea of Galilee, Dead Sea, Jordan River, mountain ridge. To find it, you go to the north, Jerusalem, you go to the north end of the Dead Sea, go to the east, and there's Jerusalem. And so for a lot of maps, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show Jerusalem as a Star of David. So there's where Jerusalem is. So we've answered the question, where is Jerusalem? And the main idea to get from behind of it is trying to remember that Israel is in this very strategic location, sort of at the center of the Bible world, and Jerusalem itself then is very much in the center of the center, kind of like the little circle in the target. You know, you got the target, and you keep moving in the concentric circles. Jerusalem is very much at the center. So that's our answer to where is Jerusalem. From there now, let's just take a look at what I'm going to call the topography of Jerusalem. So we're going to take some time to go through this because in each successive week when I'm referring to hills and valleys, you'll have a picture in your head to know where these things take place. You have, I think, you should have a handout that looks something like this. That's the map of Jerusalem. I'd like you to learn how to draw. So, and here's how to remember it, at least under my way of thinking. To draw a map of Jerusalem, think of a three-pronged pitchfork that's sticking up in the air. Each one of those prongs represents a valley. So whenever you're trying to locate or picture or imagine something in Jerusalem, think of these three valleys. Everything's flowing to the south. Three valleys. If you start from there, then you get orient everything else based on those valleys. Let's get the names of the valleys. The first valley on the west is called the Hinnom Valley or the Hinnom Valley. So on your map, the more detailed drawing I've got of it, there it is right there, the Hinnom Valley. That's a view from the top looking down. If we did a cross section, if we took the land and kind of flipped it up this way, a cross section, you can see there's the Hinnom Valley there. I think you've got this drawing too. So I'd like to take a little time. This is an interesting thing about the Hinnom Valley, but it's also kind of, I hope, a way that will help you think a little better about how geography works in the Bible and names of places. Matthew 5:22, Jesus says, "Whoever says, 'You fool,' shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell." So you see, I've made the word hell in red. So let's talk about what is that? Let's do some vocabulary. What is hell? What's it talking about there? For starters, and this is just kind of one of my things, is that we, maybe it's because it's a simple way to describe it for kids, but in the end, I think it's kind of misleading in that we have this idea, when people die, they either go to heaven or hell, and then when Jesus comes back, everybody goes to heaven or hell, and that's it, okay? But when you read the Bible, it's more complicated than that. You're certainly, when people die, they're with Jesus, but when he comes back at the rapture, they'll be resurrected, and then they come down with him to rule with him on the earth. And then there's this time when people die, they're in, by various names, somewhere, but then they have a final judgment, and then they're cast into the fiery hell. So there's actually lots of different names for the concept of hell, and I'm not going to go into all those and try to work that out. Let's look in this particular case, though. So what's the word? Well, I can tell you for sure, well, pretty sure, Jesus didn't say hell, because that's an English word, and he wasn't speaking English, right? So we can do that. So what's the Greek word? Well, here's one of my pet peeves. You've heard this before. When someone stands in a pulpit and they say, well, the Greek word for this is, and then they say an English word right after that. And I always think, that's not a Greek word. That's an English word. And they're kind of substituting. So I'm not going to do that. There's the Greek word right there, which means probably about as much to you as it does to me or anybody. It doesn't mean much of any of us. So what is that word? If we transliterate it, that is, take each of the letters, the Greek letters, and kind of substitute an English letter for it, we get a word, Gehenna. And for purposes you'll see in a minute, I'm going to do different colors like that. Gehenna. Do you see why I might be going to this at this point? Does anybody see it yet? The henna part. And we're talking about the Hinnom Valley, okay? So, you know, in Greek, when someone said Gehenna, what did they mean? Well, nothing really, because it's not really a Greek word. This is a transliteration of a Hebrew word. Where I live now, down the road a little bit from us, is a town in Texas called Paradise. So if you were going to translate, I was going to have Sten do this, but it doesn't work because of the way the Swedish language works. If you were going to translate, if I said, I'm going to paradise into another language, what would you do? Would you translate the meaning of the word paradise? And then you'd say, I'm going to paradise, and the person would say, oh, you're about to die? No. Paradise is a town in Texas. So what would you do? It's okay. You would maybe take the English letters and make a sound like that. So that's what all that's going on here is, there's a Hebrew word, and they're taking and putting Greek letters for it. So let's look at the Hebrew word. Well, there's the Hebrew word. That doesn't do us much good either, does it? But we can translate the Hebrew word, transliterate the Hebrew word, and just put it into English letters, and it's something very similar. It's Gehinnom, and now you really ought to see it, right? And what that means is Valley of Hinnom. I think arguably you could translate this as, whoever says you fool shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery Valley of Hinnom. I'm not saying you should translate it that way, because when an English reader reads that, they're going to think, well, what's in the Valley of Hinnom? Is it a nice place? Is it you? Because we don't know what it is. So the reason it's translated as hell is, over time, the Valley of Hinnom that we're looking at right now in geography came to be a name for hell. So do we say it as the Valley of Hinnom? You're not going to see that if you're just reading an English translation that says hell. How did the Valley of Hinnom come to be known as hell? We'll take a look at that. Don't ask me what the Hebrew word Hinnom means. I don't know. And I've looked it up. I think maybe the names of places always come from words that have meanings, but I think the meaning of that one may be lost. Anybody ever look at that, have a different idea? So I don't know. But the Valley of Hinnom. 2 Chronicles 28:3. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 16 years. He did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord, as his father David had done, but he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. He also made cast metal images for the Baals. Furthermore, he burned incense in the Valley of Ben-Hinnom and burned his sons in fire according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had driven out from the sons of Israel. So we've got this wicked king Ahaz who's burning incense and burning his sons in fire in the Valley of Hinnom. 2 Chronicles 33, Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 55 years in Jerusalem. He did evil in the sight of the Lord according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord dispossessed before the sons of Israel. He also made his sons pass through the fire in the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, and he practiced witchcraft, used divination, practiced sorcery, and dealt with mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger. 2 Kings, we actually have a good king. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 31 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jedidah, the daughter of Adiah of Bozkath. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord and walked entirely in the way of his father David and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. He also defiled Topheth, which is in the Valley of Hinnom, so that no one would make his son or his daughter pass through the fire for Molech. So Josiah, the good king, makes the area defiled, which in effect, you don't go there. He's stopping these evil practices in the Valley of Hinnom. Jeremiah 7, when Jeremiah is talking about the terrible judgment to come upon Israel, "For the sons of Judah have done that which is evil in my sight, declares the Lord. They have put their detestable things in the house which is called by my name to defile it. They have built the high places of Topheth, which is in the Valley of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I did not command, and it did not come into my mind. Therefore, behold, days are coming, declares the Lord, when it will no longer be called Topheth or the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, but the Valley of Slaughter, for they will bury in Topheth because there is no other place. The dead bodies of this people will be food for the birds of the sky and for the animals of the earth, and no one will frighten them away. Then I will eliminate from the cities of Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem the voice of joy and the voice of gladness, the voice of the groom and the voice of the bride, for the land will become a site of ruins. So, when you're reading in Matthew or other places in the Bible of the Valley of Hinnom, there's all that kind of history behind it. It should bring those images. But anyway, you see from the Valley of Hinnom, it's associated with these terrible, evil things. And so, I've got a picture for you of the Hinnom Valley, and not just any picture of the Hinnom Valley, but the Hinnom Valley with a fire in it. So I don't know if that's obviously an understatement, but my friend who's taken most of the pictures that I use, I just have a fond memory of him thinking when he's at the Valley of Hinnom one of hundreds of times and he looks up and sees there's a fire, thinking, wow, I got to get this picture, a fire in the Valley of Hinnom. So there's the Valley of Hinnom. All the way backward, okay? Drawing a picture of Jerusalem, you want a three-pronged pitchfork facing up. Each prong is a valley. The valley on the west is the Hinnom Valley. Then there's the valley in the center. When I have young people in a class, this is a lot of fun. This group may not be quite as, but I got to have somebody with a little zest. Anybody want to take a shot? Take a guess at what we call the valley that's in the center. The Central Valley, there we go. Okay, the Central Valley. As far as I know, the Central Valley, and there it is on our more detailed drawing, the Central Valley doesn't by name occur in the Bible. It's also called the Tyropian Valley, which I think may be even a post-biblical name, I'm not sure. It's one of those things that it's there when you're following the stories, you see that it's there and it makes sense, but not specifically referred to by name. Looking at the cross section, you can see there's the Central Valley. So we've got two valleys. And then the valley on the east is the Kidron Valley, or the Kedron Valley. There it is on the overhead map. And there it is on the cross section, the Kedron Valley. I have a couple verses of that. I almost couldn't hold myself back Sunday when Dan was talking. He was talking about a comparison between David and Jesus, how David was bringing to himself all the people that had been rejected. And in that way, David was a picture of Jesus. The Kidron Valley is also, David is kind of a picture of Jesus. In 2 Samuel 15, Absalom is challenging David's rule and David has to flee. Then David said to Ittai, go and cross over the brook Kidron. So Ittai the Gittite crossed over with all his men and all the little ones who were with him. While all the country was weeping with a loud voice, all the people were crossing over. The king, that is David, was also crossing over the brook Kidron, and all the people were crossing over toward the way of the wilderness. So David, who's facing rejection as king of Israel, is fleeing to the east and goes over the Kidron Valley. John 18, verse 1. This is immediately after the upper room, the last Passover, the first Lord's Supper meeting. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went away with his disciples across the ravine of the Kidron, where there was a garden which he entered with his disciples. I think the geography we're seeing is kind of a pattern there, which leads into when you cross the Kidron Valley, this is for a later class maybe, you come to the Mount of Olives, which is just replete with things that lead up to the fact that that's where Jesus ascends from, and it's where he, I believe, will descend, and there's lots of similar things, but we're talking about the valley. So there's the three valleys. You can draw that much, you're well on your way to drawing a map of Jerusalem. There's the three valleys on the cross section. So if you've got valleys, what are between valleys? You got to have a hill. If you don't have a hill between the two valleys, it's just one valley. So you got to have hills. So there's the hill. So the next step is we need to identify these four hills in Jerusalem, the four hills between the valley. There they are, and we'll go through them. On the west is the central mountain ridge. If you remember back here on our map of the Israel as a whole, the land between, there's this ridge. It starts at Mount Carmel and comes to the southeast and then turns roughly south. That mountain ridge, that is the Western Hill. So Jerusalem doesn't sit exactly on the central mountain ridge. It butts up and is adjacent, immediately adjacent to the central mountain ridge. So now we got to get to two hills, one that is on the western side of the central valley and one that's on the eastern side of the central valley. I'm going to go out again to one of my obviously more alert, brighter students and ask, what hill do you suppose is on the western side of the central valley? The western hill. That's the kind of student I'm looking for, the western hill. And on the eastern side, the eastern hill. Again, those are not known by those names in the Bible, but it's a good way to keep it straight in your head. We'll talk about that some more. And then further to the east, I've already mentioned it, is the Mount of Olives. So, if we look at our map here, we've got the Hinnom Valley, the Central Valley, and the Kidron Valley. We've got the Central Mount, oops, we'll look at the valleys here. Hinnom, Central, Kidron. And then for the hills, we've got the Central Mountain Ridge, the Western Hill, the Eastern Hill. We're going to pause a little bit here. And remember, all this stuff we're doing here is just sort of setting the stage so that when we tell the stories, you'll have a picture in your head. When you think about the Eastern Hill, think about it having two parts, a southern part and a northern part. There's a real important geographical distinction. We'll get there. And when you're there, they're distinct. The southern part of the hill is distinctly lower, and you come uphill, and then there's kind of a big jump up to the northern hill. But just keep in mind, there are two parts of it. I'll keep referring to that. And then on the east, the Mount of Olives. Cross section again, Central Mountain Ridge, Western Hill, Eastern Hill, Mount of Olives. Hopefully you understand that diagram now. And this one. I'm going to show you where the Temple Mount is. That's not in the early stories in the history, but all the pictures, it's there. So you might as well know what it is and what we're talking about. The Temple Mount. There were two temples, the temple that built in Solomon's time, and then a temple built in Jesus' time. And they're built on a big flat surface that was built. The Temple Mount is distinct from the temple itself. We'll talk about that. But the Temple Mount, essentially the same place in the Old Testament and the New, is on the northern part of the Eastern Hill, right in that area there. And on that cross-sectional thing you've seen, I've drawn it in. That sort of represents the Temple Mount. So if you don't know what the Temple Mount is, we'll explain that in good time, but just get that picture kind of in your head. Here's a map of Jerusalem in First Temple period, Old Testament Jerusalem, doesn't matter. And here, map 11.1 in the Satellite Bible Atlas. Quickly see, you can identify the valleys. 1, 2, 3, Hinnom, Central, Kidron. Before we go on to the Temple Mount, you see that map has a scale. That represents about 1,000 feet to give us an idea what the city of Jerusalem is like. So if I go down here and go, okay, 1,000 feet, I'm going to start over in the Hinnom Valley. There's 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, and then 500, maybe another 500. So that's about 3,500 feet or 2/3 of a mile from the Hinnom Valley to the Kidron Valley. You're going to walk that in about 10 minutes if you walk briskly. So as we're looking at everything in this space, you can kind of keep that spatial dimension in mind. There's the Central Mountain Ridge, Western Hill, Eastern Hill, has a southern part and the northern part. And there's the Temple Mount and the Mount of Olives. So you can see from the Central Mountain Ridge to the Mount of Olives is going to be a little bit longer than that, maybe closer to a mile. That's about it. Let's take a look at some pictures that maybe will help emblazon this on our mind. First and favorite geography teacher said, my goal is to burn these images on your brain so that when you're reading, you have a map in your head and you can picture what's going on. Now, if you can see, there's the Hinnom Valley. There's the Central Valley. The Kidron Valley is maybe even easier to see. Can't really see the Central Mountain Ridge, but it's over here. Western Hill. The Eastern Hill, and you can very clearly see the southern part of the Eastern Hill. And the northern part that includes the Temple Mount, and then the Mount of Olives on the east. To give you an idea, aerial pictures make everything look kind of flat. There's the Kidron Valley. We're going to take a look at a picture standing on that circle, looking kind of to the east to get an idea of what it looks like. So I'm on the southern part of the southern hill looking to the east or the northeast across the Kidron Valley, and that gives an idea of the depth and the steepness of those valleys. Okay, there's the Kidron Valley, and you can even see, to get an idea, there's a couple people walking right there. So it's very, very steep. I noticed this the last time I was there. I was standing on the western hill, and I got all confused because I was standing on the western hill looking across to the Temple Mount, and I was like, am I in the right place? I can't see the Kidron Valley. And it was just because where I was standing is because it's so narrow and steep, you just look right across and you see the top of the buildings on the eastern hill looking right into the Mount of Olives, and you can't see it because it's so deep and shallow this way. You can look right across the top. If I'd never been there before, I would not have even occurred to me that there was a valley there because it drops off so fast. Repetition is the mother of learning, or something like that. There's a different view showing the valleys and the hills. So we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about where is Jerusalem, and we've covered the topography of Jerusalem. You'll see those valleys and hills again and again and again, but give us some context for that so we can now start into the history of Jerusalem and see where that takes us, okay? We're going to start with Abram and Jerusalem. And the first story we're going to cover is Abraham in Jerusalem, the story of Melchizedek, Genesis 13. So Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Then Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife between you and me. Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right, or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left. So Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley. I should probably have those read. We've got Canaan and we've got the valley. And Lot moved his tent as far as Sodom. So let's see what that looks like on the map. Ah, okay. So where's the first geographical reference there? I skipped one even. Is the Negev. Negev. Frequently when you see Hebrew transliterated, sometimes you'll see a B and sometimes you'll see a V. That relates to the peculiarity of the language. They're the same thing. Negev, Negev. The Negev is this southern area of the land between. You go past the Negev to the south and you're in the wilderness where Israel wandered for 40 years. Not enough water to live. The Negev is kind of on the edge of that. So that's where Abram went. He came up from Egypt. Abram settled in Canaan while Lot settled among the cities of the valley as far as Sodom. So I think generally speaking what they're describing here is this is Canaan, west of the central mountain ridge. The cities of the valley as far as Sodom, where Lot settled, is basically the valley it's talking about is the valley of the Dead Sea. That valley of the Dead Sea, it's called the Rift Valley. There's a fault there that, as far as I understand, it extends north into Europe and all the way south into Africa. It's actually below sea level right there. But generally speaking, this is where we've got Lot and Abram divided. We're getting to Melchizedek. In the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Eleazar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goim, these kings made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, Shemeber, king of Zeboiim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. And all these joined forces in the valley of Sidim, that is the Salt Sea. Okay, so that's that valley we were talking about. So here's the bad guy kings, and here's the kings they're attacking. And the names you'll notice are Sodom, Gomorrah, in the valley of Sidim, that is in the Salt Sea. If you have a satellite Bible atlas, map 2-2 gives a really good description. It's kind of illustrative how a lot of those maps in that atlas work. You see that arrow is describing the path of the kings from the north as they come down, and you can see then they're concentrating and they're attacking in the valley, the area where Lot went. That's the passage we were on. So when Abram heard that his kinsmen had been taken captive, he led forth his trained men, born in his house, 318 of them, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. And he delivered these forces against them by night, he and his servants, and defeated them and pursued them to Hobah, north of Damascus. So we've got, he pursued them as far as Dan, and pursued them to Hobah, north of Damascus. So here's the basic story. These kings come down and they attack this valley. And then Abram chases them as far as Dan in the north, and north of Damascus, which is even further. So there's kind of a geographical picture of that story, the attackers, and then Abram chasing them back. interesting thing, this is kind of, well, it does relate to geography. It says he chased them as far as Dan. Who is Dan in the Bible? Dan is one of Jacob's sons, right? This is a story about Abram. Isaac, I don't think Isaac's born yet. Certainly Jacob hasn't been born yet. And certainly Dan hasn't been born yet. Well, before we get to that, I'm not paying attention to my own slides here. To give you dimensions of how far he chased them, the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea is 100 miles. So Abraham chased them over 100 miles with his 318 people. Amazing. So back to my point about Dan, though. So this is four generations before Dan is born, and this area is called Dan. And then it gets further confusing is that when Israel enters the land, here's the land that is allotted to Dan. It's not up there in the north. It's down by the coast. Then later, you know, those stories in Judges with the fake priest with his idols and all, and the tribe of Dan decides to go up to north and find some property. Then Dan settles up there. So we've got Dan locating here in the book of Judges, but back in Genesis, we're referring to this place as Dan, and it wasn't even what was allotted to them. So what's going on? I don't really know the answer to that, but I think it could be it'd be like if I was telling a story today of the pilgrims, and I said the pilgrims landed in North America near Boston. I'm obviously speaking to an audience today that knows where Boston is. Boston didn't exist when the pilgrims landed. So in some way, we've got a translation, some kind of an issue going on here that when this is reduced to writing, it is. But again, if Moses is writing Genesis, those events haven't happened yet. So I don't know. I'll leave that to people who have looked at that more than I have to explain that. But I just pointed out, too, because if anyone ever asks you that, you'll at least be aware of the issue. He pursued them as far as Dan. And now you're saying, okay, that's nice, Jack. What's this got to do with Jerusalem? After Abram's return from the defeat of Chedor Laomer and the kings who were with him, the king of Sodom went out to meet Abram at the Valley of Shaveh. That is the king's valley. Don't ask me that one. I don't know. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was a priest of God Most High. So Melchizedek, if you were reading that in the Old Testament, you would probably say there's something kind of special about this guy. He's a priest. What's going on? But then it gets even more intense when we get to the New Testament. When the writer of Hebrews is talking about Jesus, he says, "And having been made perfect, he became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation, being designated by God as a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek." So who's this Melchizedek? A lot of different theories on that, but it's obviously a very important person. At a minimum, this is a type, someone that's pointing toward Christ, and maybe more, but we're not going to get into that now. But in any event, Melchizedek, the king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. I think there's a pretty good consensus, not everyone agrees with this, that Salem is Jerusalem. There's that similarity in names. So when you're looking at this, who is this priest that comes like out of nowhere, no beginning, no end, where, who, okay, and this maybe this picture or more of Christ, he is not just all those attributes, he's also king of Salem, king of Jerusalem. And it says that he brought out bread and wine. And maybe I'm reading too much into this one, but I think this is kind of reflecting some geography here. So Abram's coming back from the north. When you travel on the west side of the Dead Sea, I mean in the land of Israel, there's that central mountain ridge. You can't travel on the side of the central mountain ridge. There's valleys cut through it. Okay, so if you do, it's like this, and you're walking with one leg higher than the other, right? And you're going up and down and through valleys. So you either walk along the coast or you stay right on top of the ridge. That's why a lot of Old Testament stories, that's another map from the Satellite Bible Atlas, the same one too. It's called the Central Mountain Ridge, is often referred to in the Bible. I'm not in the Bible. It's called the Way of the Patriarchs, because so many of the stories of the patriarchs are going up and down the Central Mountain Ridge, up and down the Central Mountain Ridge. Called the Way of the Patriarchs. And now we talked about before, remember the Central Mountain Ridge is the western side of Jerusalem. So the picture I get from that verse is, there's the Central Mountain Ridge. Abram is returning from the north after this victory. And Melchizedek, brought out, came out from Salem to meet him. This may be similar to a picture of, you know, you're driving down a Texas highway and someone, you know, comes out from the town or out from the Buc-ee's or something to meet you on the highway. I don't know if that works or not. In the picture, there's the path that Abram's going to be coming, returning from the north, and Melchizedek comes out. Melchizedek, the king of Salem or king of Jerusalem. And I think that's probably enough for tonight. We will start next week. If I forget, remind me, we're going to start with the offering of Isaac. Right? Just a couple times this week, when you're sitting there bored, you're on a telephone with someone you don't really want to be talking to, just, you know, draw a little map of Jerusalem, kind of get it in your head. Any questions? Comments, criticisms, complaints? So, yes?
Really interesting about Jesus and David both crossing the Kidron Valley. The one-year Bible, which is just straight through both Testaments at the same time, both those are on the same day.
Really?
Pretty interesting.
Wow, that's pretty neat. And I get started on that one is that more than that, and I do this lesson anytime I get a chance. If you look in the Old Testament, David flees out over the Kidron Valley, and of course, then goes over the Mount of Olives. When Ezekiel describes the glory of God departing from the temple, it departs and goes over and sort of lingers over the Mount of Olives, and then goes away. And then it describes when the glory one day will fill the temple again. The glory comes back and hovers over the Mount of Olives and enters. Zechariah, it talks about who will stand on the Mount of Olives and it will split in two. Palm Sunday, where does Jesus enter the city from? Over the Mount of Olives. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think entering over the Mount of Olives, coming into the east, is a way of saying, yes, I'm that one. And then in Acts, when he ascends, at the very end of the story, it says they returned from the Mount of Olives. And the two angels, the two men, the two in white or whatever, say he will return in the same way that he left. I think that means in the clouds. He returns in the clouds. It says that explicitly elsewhere. But I also think it means, I think there's good reason to think it means the very place, the Mount of Olives, given all that history. So, and this read through the Bible in a year, which is inspired, confirms the same thing. Or maybe not. But it is a wonderful, isn't it wonderful when that kind of thing happens and you go, wow, look at that. So, anything else? Yes?
You showed a picture earlier of you're showing the Kidron Valley and you mm-hmm. said, look, you can see people walking there. Today, is that, do people have apartments and homes on these?
I'm not sure. I think in the Kidron Valley there's a road. It's not right at the bottom. It's kind of up a little bit. On the Mount of Olives side of the Kidron Valley, part of that is a big Jewish cemetery. And there, I think I'm getting outside of what I might be making this up, so don't put too much into it. But Jews believe that when you, that's where, you know, Ezekiel and bones and people rising in a resurrection, Jews that believe that, this is the first place it happens, so it's really good to be buried there, which is kind of ties in. There's so many things that our friends across the street believe that is, particularly the Jews across the street, that is exactly what we believe. There's so much of that that's the same. A little further north on the Mount of Olives side of the Kidron Valley is a neighborhood called, I don't remember, but it is, you don't go there. You just don't go there. Really rough Arab neighborhood. There are some Jews who buy land and live there, but they're living like boarded up, and it's a whole other thing. So on the eastern side, the western side of the Kidron Valley, there's really, it's just straight down to the valley. There's the Temple Mount, and then it drops straight down to the valley. There is a Muslim cemetery there. I've heard that's because that's related to the idea of Jesus coming back, and he's not going to come there because you can't go across a cemetery and so forth. But yeah, and then further north on the Mount of Olives, which would be the Hebrew University, right? It's kind of, if you keep going north, there's the Hebrew University. There's a famous hospital up there too that I can't remember the name. Hadassah Hospital, yeah.
Mount Scopus.
Mount Scopus, yes. So that's always been clear in my mind, is Mount Scopus and the Mount of Olives are kind of...
Yeah, there's French Hill, Mount Scopus, and Mount of Olives.
Yes. And it's not like it's like hill all the way down to the bottom. They're all really kind of part of the same ridge. Yeah. Some great, yeah, I was just some stories from like 1948 about the hospital there and so forth. Anything else? Thank you, Lord. Thank you for this time. I don't understand why you would use me or any of us to try to lead or help others in understanding the Bible. It is so beyond us, and why you would use people like us for anything, I don't understand. But I praise you and I thank you for that. I trust you for that, and I trust that what I have said that is wrong, you'll work that out and protect us from that and even use that for your glory and your blessings. I pray that, again, we will understand a little bit better about Jerusalem, why you picked it, its future, and that in studying that, we will love you, we will trust you, we'll have a better sense of who you are, and we'll look with more eager anticipation for the return of our Savior Jesus Christ. We thank you and praise you in his name. Amen.